This week on Potlatch, Michael Jennings tells about an agreement with the Fairbanks Police Department on minority hiring. In mid-April, the Fairbanks National Organization for Women, the Fairbanks National Association for the Advancement of Colored People, and the Fairbanks Native Association drew up an agreement with the city of Fairbanks. According to this agreement, the city would hire more women, blacks, and natives by the 1st of June. I asked the Fairbanks Native Association representative, Michael Jennings, how the agreement came about.
I think that it was probably pretty much spearheaded by J.P. Jones of the National... Excuse me, of the NAACP. And J.P. was concerned about police harassment and not enough blacks on the police force. And we concurred with the amount of trouble that happens on Second Avenue and the lack of minorities within the police department, uniformed police officers and women. And so after talking with him on a couple of occasions, I was invited to sit in on some mediations, which originally took place with Police Chief Wolf Sole. And although the police chief wasn't totally unreceptive, I think that we were looking for a way to get a sealed agreement with him rather than just his word, because if he quit or was fired or died or anything, then we'd be right back where we started. So the Department of Justice Community Relations Branch was contacted, and they came up to mediate a formal agreement.
Now, which division is this? Was this a federal government or state government?
Yes, it's the federal government. They're out of Region 10.
And what was their interest in this?
Their interest was to alleviate any potential volatile situations before they actually occurred. And they came up as a third-party neutral to mediate. They sent a professional mediator up to mediate this agreement.
What does the agreement call for?
I think that the meat of the thing calls for taking a look at the testing patterns to see if they discriminate overtly or inadvertently against minorities or women. It calls for 5 police officers funded under state LEAA money to be on board by June 1, '76. It calls for local participation in training in terms of cultural, linguistics, social, or economical. I think that's really the meat of it. There are a lot of other side issues that are related issues. They're not actually side issues in terms of continuation funding. And
you mentioned the testing program earlier. What is... Now, the tests are given to everybody, and they are pretty much standardized tests. How would they discriminate against women or ethnic minorities?
Well, in terms of Native American people and in Alaska, suppose that there's a question such as, what would you rather do, play golf or play tennis on a Sunday afternoon? And you're giving that to somebody that just came out of Allakaket. Chances are they probably wouldn't care what they did on Sunday afternoon, because they wouldn't be interested in either of those two sports necessarily. Or, you know, the real classic in terms of educational testing patterns was, what would you do if you walked out of your house and saw an elephant in the street? And, you know, it's administered statewide. It's not very relevant.
In terms of, the experience of Native Americans.
It doesn't transcend the cultural variances or make allowances for them.
So what you're saying, in effect, is that somebody who has had experience similar to the persons who made up the test would do better on the test.
Well, yeah, that's one way to look at it. The other way, I think, is to sort have somebody looking at the test results that was familiar with the area and the cultures within the area. And that way they would have a better base for understanding some of the answers that would come up on the tests.
How about the estimate a couple of years ago? I asked a police officer once why the police department doesn't have more natives on there. And his comment was that native people who join the police force would be looked upon by other native people as a kind of a traitor, as someone who would not be looking out for the best interests of native people, but would have, to some extent, sold out and become simply a white Eskimo or a white Indian.
Well, in reference to that, I would ask the gentleman how he is viewed by his own peers that are not in the police department. Isn't he looked upon in the same light? I personally think that having minorities on Second Avenue would probably lessen the degree of tension. A black man can deal with a group of black people in an argument better than a white man walking into that same argument, regardless of whether he has a uniform on or not. The same is true, I think, with native people.
Would you suggest, then, if there's a ruckus among native people, that a native officer be sent out every time?
Not necessarily, but through association with native officers on the police force, I think other policemen would learn to be attuned to how to handle situations a little more appropriately.
For example, what are they doing now that you think is wrong?
Well, I think that they're fairly insensitive to cultural and linguistic variances. I had occasion to observe on First Avenue one afternoon a police officer trying to make an arrest on an Eskimo gentleman that I knew because he thought the guy was drunk because he couldn't understand him. And in fact, he was a very elderly man, and he was not intoxicated. He just had a very severe problem with the English language. And he sort of spoke Eskimo and English combined. And the officer couldn't understand what he was doing. And with a little talking to the officer, understood that the problem was that the guy was having some trouble with language, not that he was intoxicated. All people make gross assumptions, and all people have stereotypes of Indians and blacks, whether they are, conscious or subconscious, and they have a definite effect in the way that people relate to each other with it. By taking into account the differences between minorities and women, and having that in the testing and the training and in an officer, in the officer's staffing patterns, but through association and through the training, they're going to learn to deal with those sorts of situations far better than they currently are able to. I right now believe it's out of ignorance, not necessarily out of overt discrimination by the police department.
That was going to be one of my next questions, was do you think police officers are more prejudiced than anybody else?
No, police officers are just people. I couldn't say that. There may be certain individuals, and I don't know any personally, but there may be, and then there may not be.
Somewhere there's a lady with a special set of feelings who would love to sit and listen to the things I have to say. Somewhere past the darkness that I see outside my window, and there's a room that's warm and cozy and a place for me to stay. Somewhere there's a lady who is all inside a woman, who will love me for my goodness and just throw the rest away. Somewhere there's a lady who will tolerate my madness and who will look up on my sadness as a thing that goes away. Outside my window, There's a room that's warm and cozy and a place for me to go. Somewhere there's a lady who is all inside a woman who will love me for my goodness and just throw the rest away. Somewhere there's a lady who will tolerate my madness and who will look up on my sadness as a thing that goes away.
How are people going to be recruiting differently from what they've already been recruiting as?
Well, in terms of advertisement, we think that by placing block ads in the newspaper as well as job ads in the classified, that people who might already have a job and not really be looking for one but would consider a position in the police department might more readily, it might be more evident to them in thumbing through the paper. And the police department is establishing a community relations branch, and Duke, who's a black officer on the police force, is going to be assigned to recruit minority peoples, and to hopefully he will head he will become the division coordinator of this new branch that would deal with community relations. And Duke's well known among the Native community and well liked, and I believe that Mary Afghan indicated that he was well known among the women's organizations and well liked, and he's very well liked in the NAACP, and therefore we thought that by having him on board and by having him, you know, help with some of the recruitment processes, that we might be able to staff these positions. The city has been sending the circulars to us for a number of years, and I can't speak for attitudes within the administration of FNA prior to a couple of years ago, but I know that on occasion we're kind of lax in getting the circulars out for police officers. We didn't think we could get our people through the tests without some, you know, strenuous prepping. The Native community is under a good deal of pressure to come up with administrative types to staff its corporations. But I think that this can be done in terms of all the groups here.
How are you going to get people to want to become police officers?
Well, we're going to do some educational things throughout the community in terms of high school, hopefully through the U of A, and all of its sub-branches, to sort of instill the idea within the Native community, especially the students, that this is one way to work on the betterment of Native people within, you know, the urban communities primarily. Not that the bush communities couldn't use it also.
Do you think, what is the status of a policeman as far as Natives are concerned? Is this something to aspire to, or is this something that it's looked down upon pretty much?
I think that most things are experience-based, and I think that in terms of the youth that frequent Second Avenue, that their idea of a police officer would probably depend a lot on the quality of the police officer that they have come in contact with. And that's one of the reasons we're trying to get some Native people on Second Avenue in uniform. But I would think that right now the majority of those young people don't see it as a very attractive job.
Do you think it would attract someone from the bush? Here's why I think of someone from the bush. They have a kind of a casual way of life. They're not so much concerned with the clock as people are here. They're not so much concerned with filling out forms. They're not so much concerned with a lot of the exact types of jobs that a person has to do. Police is a very, very, how shall I say, picky kind of job.
Well, I agree with you that the police department is very regimented, bureaucratic in terms of record keeping and precise times and things like that.
A lot of it is demanded by law.
Right. I don't think that you're going to find as much problem with that as people are anticipating. The police department, when they hire people, are, you know, the people are trained, and they are given to a training officer, you know, hang around with the training officer and answer calls with him, and, you know, this man is responsible for going through a checklist book, which I have never seen, but I understand is a fairly large book that can take from 3 to 6 months to a year to complete. And what's in that book are things like tell, example, and demonstrate. And there are 3 columns for an incident. Say there a policeman is answering a family disturbance call. The training officer would tell the rookie, this is what you do when you answer these kinds of calls. Then when they get the call, he would demonstrate to the rookie how it's done, and provided that they got another call within the year or whatever, then the rookie would demonstrate it. His training officer signs off on each of these 3 steps. In addition to that, the rookies are sent within the first year to Sitka, to the police training academy down there, for I believe 6-week training course. And you know, it's like anything else that's new, you know, because I don't mean to say that your points aren't valid, but I don't like filling out paperwork either, you know, and I don't like keeping precise minutes of meetings, but it's something that I learned was an asset to me. And I learned that by seeing it, you know, taking place and people being able to reconstruct events because of this record keeping. So I think that, you know, there's not going to be as much problem with it as anticipated. It's just an educational process.
I was there on the day the monkey came into this world. His face was round and reddish, and his hair was slightly curled. He didn't look too different from the others I had seen. Who'd have thought he was the answer to the nation's dream? At first he didn't seem to be intelligent at all. Each time he'd start to walk about, he'd stumble and he'd fall. My first impression was to be a most mistaken thought. Lord Almighty, what's this little hairy monkey wrought? Because I witnessed his departure from his mother's womb, I felt inclined to check his progress every afternoon. One day the keeper of the zoo called in the live TV. Brinkley said, I think you'll be amazed at what you see. The monkey walked and talked and waved his arms about his head. In the corner was the stack of books that he had read. Set the papers across the land. It was more than weary sociologists could stand. Oh, his fame was universal. He was on the Carson show. People talked about him kindly everywhere he'd go. His insight was amazing. His philosophy was fair. He became a politician, welcome everywhere. His wit was not to be compared with any mind intact. He'd lace a phrase with irony and blend it all with fact. Conservatives applauded and the liberals were entranced. The bigots and the integrationists were in his camp. Nobody dared to meet him in an open press debate. He was nominated by the folks from every state. Yes, a monkey was the president, though maybe not the first. And there was peace and harmony throughout the universe. The dream I had last night has been related as it came. As for interpretation, well, it's really very plain. Would you rather have a monkey up in Washington, D.C.? Or have those people making monkeys out of you and me?
about the standards that are required for a police officer, educational standards, intelligence standards, things of this nature. You do have to pretty much become a high school graduate, or you have to work toward that, right?
To be on the Fairbanks City Police Department, you have to have either a GED or a high school diploma to qualify.
Now, is this going to hurt prospective native applicants?
Oh, I don't think so. FNA runs the adult basic education program, and we offer GEDs if somebody's seriously interested in it, and we have a candidate, and that's the only drawback to that candidate. We can facilitate that, I believe.
But for somebody who wants a job and wants it now, isn't that going to be rather difficult to have to wade through the GED exam and then wait some time before appointment to the police force? Isn't that going to be difficult?
Our high school graduation population statewide has been increasing, you know, over the last several years. And the number of people coming back who have dropped out of high school and getting their GED is increasing rather dramatically. But for the person who wants a job and he wants it now, yes, it would be an ongoing process. We could get him into some of the night classes at adult basic education. I think that the first thing that we're going to have to find are some people from the National Organization of Women and from NAACP and from the Native community who have a sincere desire to be police officers. You know, and if we can find those people, then we can work with them to overcome any shortcomings in their qualifications.
Do you know any Native people in the Fairbanks area now who would like to become police officers?
Well, actually, I have an appointment today to talk to a couple of young men that had expressed interest.
Isn't it a lot easier for a Native person who needs a job to go up working on the pipeline rather than want to become a police officer?
Has been in the past, but I think is pretty well evident to all of us who live here in Fairbanks that the pipeline is de-escalating its manpower demands, and a lot of people are now looking for a more stable, permanent position. I think that Alyeska is planning on being out by next fall, if I'm correct. My memory serves me. So we're going to have a lot of unemployed people. And within the agreement, we ask that pipeline security experience be considered in the same vein as previous law enforcement or military service because of the numbers of minorities and women employed in security. Besides that, local police aren't being paid that badly these days.
How does a police job in Fairbanks compare to a job in a Native organization such as Fairbanks Native Association or in a Native corporation such as Doyon?
I'm not sure I understand your question exactly.
Well,
FNA is a social service nonprofit entity. The pay isn't that great, and it really doesn't offer that much stability, except that it has been ongoing for a number of years, but it works on a year-to-year contract basis with state and federal contracts, but there is never any guarantee that the contracts will be there next year. Doyon, on the other hand, is a profit-making shareholder corporation that deals with subsurface and surface mineral rights development and investments. We have a shortage of Native people formally trained at a post-high school level to deal with either of those corporations. So it's a continual training process. We get people who have demonstrated talents and ability, and we get them into the right classes at the university and send them to seminars and things like that and keep building up their degree of expertise in specific areas until they become good corporate management types. So it's the same process the police department would have to do.
Isn't there a kind of a Native way of dealing with somebody, say, who's drunk or somebody who gets into a fight? And does this way differ from an urban type of way of dealing with the situation of one who gets into a fight or one who gets into a situation where he's drunk and disorderly and may cause harm to others.
I think that there are probably different cultural views on how that is appropriately handled. But I think the point is that a great deal of discretion is left up to the patrolman on Second Avenue. You know, the policeman's interpretation of the potential danger to people or property, all that is his decision when he answers a call. And there are several ways that he can handle it. If you can talk somebody out of a fight simply because some sort of identification or understanding, you know, if two friends of yours are in a beef in Tommy's and you walk in and you walk over, you know, and say, hey, come on, you know, cool it, you know, there's no need for this kind of stuff, and escort them out of the bar, I think that that would probably suffice. You know, they're no longer a danger to the establishment, and they're not disrupting anymore, and they really haven't hurt each other. So, you know, that's the sort of thing we're getting at. It's sort of subtle, you know. Instead of flaring things up, they would tend to cool them down before they flare up.
What kinds of advice would you give to Native organizations in other cities, such as Anchorage, Nome, Juneau, Sitka, etc., about getting more of Native people on the police forces in those cities?
I think that hopefully I would like to speak with some of the Native organizations in the major urban areas in Fairbanks and in Alaska, and send them copies of the document that we have, and try to instill in them that the idea or the concept that by having more minorities on the police department, that they're going to better serve the Native community and the minority community as well as the white community. And I would hope that they would work for a document such as this. I see this document as a two-idea precedent, and that is that the coalition that was formed is probably unique in and of itself, the black community and the women's community and the Native community all working together for a common cause, and that I'm very pleased with the city administration of Fairbanks that they would, you know, agree and concur to work towards some sort of equitable staffing patterns within the community, and hope that we could move on and get other such documents for the rest of their departments.
KUAC wants to know not only what you like to hear, but you can also use this address to find out how to contact people, who to contact. Let them know what you want to hear and who you want to hear it from them. I'm sure that they'll be more than happy to respond. You can do that simply by writing a letter to KUAC in Fairbanks.
Singing on today's program were Roger Miller and Tom T. Hall. We heard from Michael Jennings about the Fairbanks Police Department agreement on minority hiring. This is Jeff Kennedy. Thank you for listening to Potlatch. Potlatch is produced by KUAC under Title I of the Higher Education Act.